The fusion of creativity and technology isn't just changing the game, it's rewriting the rules. We cut to the chase with Velin Gubane, the co-founder and chief growth officer of the Avatar Agency Group. He sheds light on the transformative power of embracing diverse perspectives in marketing, revealing that the key to innovative solutions lies in the rich tapestry of varied thoughts and experiences.
I think for us, what has been the biggest lesson is the thirst and for learning. You know, if you are not willing to learn and willing to not only have your perspective, you cannot grow and you cannot collaborate and learn from other people's diverse culture. And that's based purely on just respecting the diversity of others, respecting what that diversity can contribute to the creative product.
We also discussed the synergy between AI and human creativity, as well as how this blend sets the stage for a new era of marketing.
I think there's a lot of interest around how technology is impacting creativity, especially artificial intelligence and the different versions and variations that are impacting. So I think that's tech, and it's been a trend that is developing for years now. So as we see its impact on creativity, I think it's a lasting trend that will go on for years.
Whether you're a marketer, a creative professional, or simply someone who's fascinated by the evolving landscape of technology and creativity, this episode is for you. For more insightful conversations, subscribe to the Lead Creative Podcast. Welcome to the Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Veli, thanks so much for making the time. It's exciting to talk to you again after we spoke during COVID, in the height of COVID, when we recorded the last episode.
Imagine. Seems like a lifetime away now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What trends, in fact, are you following right now that you think are going to change things within creativity and the marketing space in general?
Well, technology as the master trend, I think there's a lot of interest around how technology is impacting creativity, especially artificial intelligence and the different versions and variations that are impacting. So I think that's tech, and it's been a trend that is developing for years now. So as we see its impact on creativity, I think it's a lasting trend that will go on for years.
That's great. And just to go back a little bit to the last conversation that we had, because we spoke a lot at the time about diversity, about transformation, about things that were happening in the industry, some of which are still happening. Can you share your thoughts around how diversity leads to growth? Because you've been beating this drum of diversity and transformation for a long time. How have you seen it lead to growth? And can you also share Avatar's commitment to how it has directly contributed to your growth and the growth of the brands you work with?
Yeah, I think maybe start in numbers. I think when we last spoke, we were an agency group of probably about 100 people. We are now aging 320, 330 people that are in our employ. So that's just the growth that has happened in the last 3 years. And at the base of it is our understanding of diversity, our understanding of how that diversity leads to insight that is now beneficial to brands, you know. Diversity and a transformed creative setup not only diversity in race, diversity in interests. I think from a South African's perspective, when you say diversity, you think of just the racial, you know, but diversity of thinking, you know, diversity of being exposed to the different subgroups that are developing and that you need to market to. So free thinkers, people that are thinking differently from the next person that they're sitting next to, yes, starts building value in creativity.
Yes. In some instances, I think to that point around diversity of thinking, because I'm glad you mentioned that, this thing has come up in other episodes with other agency leaders around diversity of thinking, as well as brands, actually, that we have spoken to. That said, though, in some instances, when you put a group of people together in a room or in a team long enough, it sometimes happens that they start becoming agreeable, even in their diversity. They start becoming more agreeable. They start agitating less, right? And in some instances, that perspective of having these diverse group of people, these diverse group of thinkers, tends to almost become, we become more similar than we become more different the more we are in a space together. How do you then ensure or maintain this diversity of thinking? I'm very curious about how you achieve that. Yeah.
I think the base of it is, where is the source of that diversity, right? Are you bringing it in from somewhere into a collective? And if the culture is that, then when you do meet, you are basically tapping into the different diversity sources. An example, I am a diversity source from KwaMhlabuyalingana. I go home quite a lot. So my going back home fuels my diversity that I put into the table, because I live in that diversity. So I think the workplace must seem as the melting point of that diversity, not the source of that diversity. So what you need to do with diversity is, wherever, if you bring a youthful diversity in your free time, in weekends, you need to hang out with that market so you can bring it to the table. So in how I see it, it's a gathering of diversity rather than a discussion of diversity that you already have, you know. So if it's watered and if it's continuously watered and brought to the table, then you won't run into those problems, because everyone is respected for what they bring and the uniqueness of what they bring.
That makes sense. And that's a fresh perspective, I guess, on it, that you must, it's a cultural thing, first of all, and you must constantly be evolving or growing that culture, or immersing yourself, in fact, in that culture that makes you diverse or enables you to bring that diversity to the table. Are there any specific examples that you can think of where diversity within your team and even outside your team in the industry in general has led to innovative solutions that have significantly impacted clients' work or market presence in general?
We're blessed to have brands that require the diversity. Our FMCG brands and Unilever, you can't get away with marketing a product that is so democratic and universal to different age groups, different income brackets, and different regions. A brand like Aromat, used in urban areas and townships in the rural areas. So diversity then becomes the staple and the value that you bring. So there's been lots of positive impacts through our diversity. But the one that I can think of from a global perspective, so we've got Tecno as a client, which is our biggest global client based in China. So Tecno Mobile is one of the biggest cell phone giants globally. And we had to test out diversity in collaboration on the continent and the rest of the world. When we launched in Asia, we launched in the South Americas, the Americas, and the rest of the continent. So collaboration with other countries actually tested our knowledge in applying that product there. So if you look at the work that we did for Tegno, it was from our perspective, testing it in market with the in market agencies that we work, to have a diverse project and product that basically delivers on the campaign principles and values that we wanted to output to the market.
How well does it travel? Because I'm glad that you mentioned this, you know, the launch in all these places and spaces. We constantly talk about the fact that the world is becoming more similar than different, in the sense that because of connectivity, we're able to see what's happening in China, we're able to get a sense of what's happening in Japan, in London, wherever, right? So all of these things. How well does, you know, this notion and idea of diversity, more so diversity within a creative team, travel to other parts of the world? You mentioned collaboration. I'd love to understand a bit more about how do you collaborate as a predominantly South African team with people from the Americas, with people from other parts of the continent, because in some instances, there are these differences that there are these things that make us different, but also things that make us similar in very many ways. How, what was your experience of that?
Yeah, look, there are universal truths globally of just our humanness and how we relate. I think for us, what has been the biggest lesson is the thirst and for learning. You know, if you are not willing to learn and willing to not only have your perspective, you cannot grow and you cannot collaborate and learn from other people's diverse culture. And that's based purely on just respecting the diversity of others, respecting what that diversity can contribute to the creative product. So we've recently launched a campaign for APSA, Your Story Matters. Now, that as a concept is universal. Everyone has a story to tell, wherever you're from in the world. But the way we tell our stories is a bit different. Now, when we were putting together the work, we had to go find that difference. And in the TV ad, there's certain regions that are catered for in that diversity. We talked to the team in Ghana, and there was a specific ceremony, which was the naming ceremony of a baby that is in the ad. You know, that when someone looks at the ad or watches the ad, they probably won't pick it up. But for the Ghanaian market, that specific ceremony of naming the baby is appreciated because we've gone that deep. So there's stories, there's people, stories that are universal. But when you dig deep and you respect that country's or that region's diversity, you can actually get into a richer context. But that is not only understood by that region, can be universally applied as well.
Yeah. There's this ongoing debate that keeps evolving around the effectiveness of creativity in business, or at least the effectiveness of what the creative industry brings to business growth. How do brands and agencies quantify the impact of creative strategies towards their growth and their success as clients?
Look, there have been numerous studies that have done for the effectiveness of creativity, so much so that the brands that carried on advertising and marketing during COVID came out with stronger brands. There's a quote that creativity is the last legal unfair advantage for business. The way we are introduced to brands is through creativity. The feelings that we have towards brands is through creativity. And as agencies, as in marketers, we are in charge of creating that emotion which leads to action. And for me, it's well documented in data that creativity indeed grows businesses and builds brands.
In your view, how has the creative industry's approach to demonstrating that value that you speak of creativity evolved over the years? Are we getting better as an industry in demonstrating the value to business?
I think that our proximity and our acceptance of digital and technology is allowing that, and the data and the post data from campaigns is the numbers, you know, and I think before this synergy between data technology was as strong as it is in the relationship with creativity. One could not really quantify, but I think in the modern era of marketing and advertising, the use of data and the use of technology as part of the creative process is really starting to prove its value in one, showing the effectiveness of creativity and growing the budgets that aim to grow the brand even more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When we started talking, you mentioned the growth, the growth of Avatar between the time we last spoke, when you were over 100 strong team to date, when you are over 300 strong as a team. So there's been a lot of growth. There have been many changes. And among some of those changes, you've appointed Mzamo Qala as the group CEO. You've also appointed Philip Ireland as the chief creative officer, the position that you held for the longest time in Avatar. How have these major changes helped to maintain or improve what Avatar started out with? Because as I've said, you are handing over a position that you've always held, and you've mentioned culture a bit and the culture of the agency. How have things changed?
I think Zia and I realized very early on that we have to have people that are more talented and more intelligent around to take the business further. You find that entrepreneurs end up becoming the obstacle of their own growth and their own business. So we've always wanted a business that can have a contribution from multiple people that can add to the journey. As the agency group, which is MNN, Mkhwanazi and Ngubane, MNN Brands, which is the holding company that owns all the 9 agencies that we have, we saw it fit that we appoint the relevant leaders that will take the business forward. Philip Ireland, well-respected globally, fitting in with our purpose of respected globally and preferred locally in the markets that we operate in. So that is at the core of what we are doing. So Philip takes over as a global chief creative officer based in London for that specific reason of being exposed to an even bigger insight globally whilst operating in the different markets that we have. So that has been the growth of the Avatar agency as an agency group, but more also just the contribution of MNN. Now, the whole system is to make sure that we deliver to our clients a superior global product. Yeah.
For sure. No. Yeah, that all makes sense. And I think I like this. I mean, it's not just like it, but I feel it's different, right? Having someone like Philip Ireland, who's based outside of South Africa, for that to help grow and also test, I suppose, that insight, right? That creative insight that the team kind of comes up with as well.
No, definitely, and to position us as a global agency, we need to be global. You know, you can't just say it. So to be able to tap into global insights, even the way we have structured with our advisory board, we've got people as far afield as Singapore. We've got people in America. We've got people in Thailand that we respect, that we've assembled into a global advisory so that we can offer the best in market locally in where we operate. So it's very intentional in our growth. And my position moving into growth is specifically that, is to coordinate that growth, get what shared global insights that we can have locally, and also offer clients that are in the continent a way to grow outside the continent, as we've seen. Yeah.
You touched on varying cultures. You touched on when you were talking about the APSA campaign, for instance, you mentioned the Ghanaian naming ritual or naming ceremony. I'm very interested in finding out what some of these cultural nuances that you find and discover as you expand, how those nuances help to almost evolve the whole as the agency, to evolve the creative thinking, to evolve the people within. Because like you've just said, if you have never been to Ghana and you've never heard about that naming ceremony, you go there for the first time, when you come back as a creative mind, you're changed, right? Like, what are some of these nuances that you found over time that have added to the value of the creative output as well as the thinking and the team?
And for me, you know, in the modern age of technology, I mean, I like traveling physically, but I think now the information, if interested about the different countries and the different regions, is widely accessible. So yeah. For me, what we encourage our creative team is to go outside their comfort zone and what they might know or what they've done before. When I look at, when I review a campaign, I'm not trying to emulate what we've just done for that brand. We're trying to come back and add more insight so that the creative product can be even better. So the detail that we go into in finding the insights shows, one, the respect for the market, and shows the love for the brands. And that is easily understood and translated in that market, you know, where brands seem to scratch the inside surface, and we want to go deeper. And I think this APSA campaign has allowed us, launching in 12 different regions, we've had to really look at our product. And similarly before with Techno, where we even had regions that maybe culturally might be in conflict or competing, and we have to find and the responsible middle ground, able to communicate on the same 60-second ad to all these different markets that might contrast a bit in values, gender norms, and stuff like that. So it comes with a lot of responsibility, but at the base of it, it comes with the willingness to really go deep and humble yourself to learning, and having the right people and the right partners to learn from in order to make your creative product even better.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. To that end, there's a lot of talk around hyper-personalization. In fact, this isn't something new. We've spoken about this as you know, as the industry for a long time. But it continues to be a key trend, with some research citing that 72% of consumers say they will engage with personalized messaging to a point, right? What are your thoughts on how brands can leverage data and technology to deliver personalized content and campaigns at scale? What you've just described to me does a bit of that, but how do we leverage that insight even more to deliver on that? Because all of us are looking for more and more hyper-personalized messaging.
Yeah, and I think data being used to have a humanized creative outcome. One of the campaigns that I respect globally is the Coca-Cola name on a can campaign. Now, the incredible data, if you research it even online, the incredible data and strategy that led to your name, Mongezi, being on the can, which is a very human outcome. So data that translates as in a very human outcome is where the personalization is going, you know, where we go into the campaign. We've set ourselves that challenge with ABSA to say every single story matters in a very empathetic and a personal way. And as you see the campaign develops, you'll see how we've executed that. But overall, in a nutshell, it's we are operating in a very privileged time where we've got all this data. But that data mustn't translate to the consumer as data. It must translate to the consumer as a humanized understanding. So the data helps us understand and influences the creative process so we can be more appealing as brands and as messages to the consumer.
There's a bit of a curveball that I'd like to throw at you on this. Are we able to achieve that?
I'll need water for this, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There's this human outcome that you speak of, this sort of humanizing the data and getting to that insight and understanding the person and the human being. It's very by and large done within the B2C space, right, to consumers, more so to sort of a mass consumer. You mentioned Coca-Cola as an example. How possible is it within the B2B space? So if a brand or if a partner is targeting you, Veli, on a B2B sort of perspective, you are this, you know, you are this individual with a lot of very many experiences. You mentioned, you know, your roots from Kwamhlabuya Lingana and there has been so much between then and today, right? How does, from a B2B perspective, do we then still humanize the data that we get to appeal to you as a business person, as an entrepreneur, rather than as a consumer, to take up one piece of software versus another, as an example?
Yeah, I found that the B2B messages that work are ones that seek to provide the empowerment to do better as a business. So for me, if you understand what my pressure points, one as an entrepreneur and one as one is in the creative space, you are able to tailor make a B2B product that appeals to me, because everyone in this space wants to get your attention and the useful information that is gathered. And again, it rolls back, whether it's B2C and B2B, it's in understanding the requirement and the pressure points. And us as brands, as practitioners, is to alleviate those. So from a B2B perspective, information that is in understanding of my core requirement becomes very useful, and that brand affinity to the provider of that information becomes someone that I'd want to do business with from a B2B perspective.
For sure. You mentioned earlier that that brands that have continued advertising even during COVID, which is to say at times, even during tough economic times, tend to be brands that stand out and stick out past those tough economic times. One of the questions that keeps coming up time and time again in the conversations that we have, of course, is that there's this cost of living crisis that the consumer is experiencing, which of course extends to the difficulties that brands are experiencing in terms of their spend in advertising and marketing. How do brands stand out with call it minimal, constrained, or really tough budgets because of the economic situation that we're in?
And again, it's innovation. It's an understanding the tough economic times and having an answer to that. You know, And adding the convenience as well. Another case in point, a campaign by an agency, 99 Cents, that I highly respect, is the Checker 60, you're right, which gives the power to the consumer to, one, save on times, have a convenient way, and put the power into their hands to actually shop the value and have that brought into your own home. So it's creating those innovations. Now, when you are sitting at home and the cost of petrol is rising, maybe it's cheaper to use that innovation to bring your groceries than the other way around. So it's leaning into those tensions and understanding that with every tough economic time, with every tough time, us as brand custodians need to see how we can add and relieve and make it easier for our consumers to interact with our brands, for finding the reasons of why they interact with our brands, and linking that reason with the reality of the economy, with the reality of the politics of the country, and so on. And again, I guess I'm going to drum this point. It comes to the understanding of the factors that your consumer operates in order to put out a product that relieves and helps and aids in order to grow that brand affinity with the consumer.
Yeah, I like this idea of lean into what the challenge is, lean into what that pressure point is, rather than shy away from it, which has always been the way that sometimes brands do, right? It's like, because a pressure point or a challenge is a negative thing, and brands tend to shy away from the, call it, the negativity. So that's an interesting perspective and a great way to look at it.
And it's a growth. I mean, you see, like, loyalty cards, when they got introduced, you know, it had to grow into this. But what it does is that it gives more information about the consumer, the pressure points that the consumer is going in return for a discount. So that is a mutually beneficial a relationship with someone that has the card, and the brands that want to know how to further help. And now, from a Unilever perspective, it's even influenced the packaging design of some of the products, because once you know the consumer and once you've got data of their needs, then it starts influencing even the core product of what you are serving to them.
To that point, getting that much data and getting that much insight on a consumer, I'm seeing more and more that in spaces and places where we used to get more consumer data, there's regulations and things that are coming into play where that consumer data is lessening more and more, right? Like there's cookie deprecation, for example, that's come into play where you can't collect cookies anymore. So that way of understanding the consumer is going away. Of course, on the other side of that, there's collecting first-party data from the consumer. So I guess the question that I'd like to ask then is, in this time when we are seeing more and more restriction on collecting consumer data, how do we come up with intelligent insights that leads to this hyper-personalization, that leads it to what you've just mentioned about understanding and leaning into those pressure points? Because we brands and agencies are getting to a point where we're getting less and less data.
Yeah. So I had the privilege of sitting on the Direct Marketers Association board at the time where the Poppy Act was being developed. Now, I think legislation to regulate and control data is very, very important, because in the wrong hands, it can be used quite negatively. So I think that requirement is a standard requirement that protects the consumer. But ongoing, the being able to opt in the first party data, as you mentioned, and the different innovations that are being developed to get that data. But I think the balance between protection and use is something that will be a tension for some, But having been exposed to the development of the law is something that is very necessary to protect the consumer. And I think in any situation, that should be the first priority of every brand, to use the data responsibly. I mean, we've seen even globally, a company as big as Facebook still has those type of tensions and problems of how far to go. Because it's such a powerful, data is the new gold. If left unregulated, it could have some disastrous consequences. So that balance is something that I think will be a balance going forward, but protection of the consumer should be paramount to use that data responsibly for the betterment of the consumer, but responsibly.
Yeah. I follow your column, Young, Gifted, and Killing It, where, of course, you surface a lot of younger people within the industry, and you talk about that insight. And one of the things that keeps coming up time and time again when you talk to young people or younger people in an industry is that the senior, more experienced, more seasoned people in that industry, they tend to not meet, or there tends to not be the sort of meeting point where they're visible to those people. What key qualities do you look for, first of all, in creatives, and how can they make themselves visible to you? I know you are looking, so you'll always find them. But in instances when they aren't sort of visible to you, how do they make themselves, how do they put themselves in your radar?
Yeah. Trust me, they find me, whether in malls or so on. But the Mark Lives, Young, Gifted, and Killing It column is something that I'm very proud of in my career, because its intention was to expose the young, gifted creatives behind the campaigns that we might know, and to start celebrating them. And it's now one of the longest running columns on Mark Lives, and has exposed and has grown a lot of careers in the space. And it's something that I'm very proud of. And I think for me, the core of it, and what I look for, is the people that come as themselves, that add to the industry. When we started in the industry, people wanted to emulate the more senior people to become like them. You know, now my culture at Avatar and the agency is come as yourself, because again, what we had talked about earlier, that if you don't come as yourself, you run the danger of being diluted and just being like everyone else. So the strength of self, and if you look at the people that are profile on Young, Gifted, and Killing It, are very different. They've got their own voice. So if young creatives have found their voice and they are sharing their voice through their work and through their perspective of the work, trust me, we'll find each other, because that's what I look for. Not only just creative output, but the type of insights and the type of creativity the candidate will be putting out. And it's uniqueness, but it's coming as yourself, adding your own voice into this industry. And I think that's what we need as an industry. We don't need another this person and another that person. We need you, you know, we need you as yourself to come and contribute to the growth of this industry.
Yeah. And I suppose more directly, where are you looking? Where are you looking at awards? Are you looking on LinkedIn? Where are you looking? Right. Like, and I think that's that's one of the critical questions that we all kind of ask ourselves. I think we ask ourselves this about our clients. We ask ourselves this about potential partners. Where are you looking?
So I look everywhere and all different sources. I've made it my life passion to unearth and discover and grow creatives, especially young Black creatives. So whether it's within my network that I reach out to frequently, which includes agency owners, people that are judging awards and so on, To the young creative that I want to hear, who's hot right now, who has found that voice. So I guess the answer is I look everywhere from the data that I have. I look at awards shows. I talk to agency owners, volunteer candidates as well via the Mark Lives platform. So we are open to anyone that has found their voice and that has got evidence of showcasing that through creativity to profile on the brand. And it's worked wonders. You know, I'm always humbled by how some people now are even putting it in their portfolio and their CVs, that they are young, gifted, and killing it from that perspective. It's highly humbling.
No, that's I mean, when I first started following the column in its early days, it really looked like a great initiative, and it has proven itself to be over the years. Veli, thanks so much for making the time and for all this insightful information that you provided. I think out of that, I get this sense of lean into the problem, lean into what the data tells you, try to understand the consumer, and that, of course, the power of cultural nuance and diversity, not just of race, but of thinking as well. So in closing, I have two last questions for you. And the first one is, if you could ask any living person about their unique take on marketing, creativity, or life, who would that person be? And what is the one question that you would ask them?
I've got an affinity to just normal South Africans. So I would go to the nearest rank and grab the first person and ask them about a campaign. Because I think when we sit in these offices away from the market, we sometimes start doing creative for ourselves. And what I like is, you know, as I travel and visit different households, is the reaction to work, you know, what people pick up from an advert. You find that those conversations we sometimes never hear. So for me, I'm a fan of getting feedback, not from fellow marketers and so on, but the person that might not be in marketing, someone just going on with their day-to-day lives and say, what do you think of this campaign? What is it communicating? So I guess the answer is I would ask any South African that is not intimately involved in the advertising or marketing space.
Yeah. So we usually ask our guests to leave us a question for our next guest as well. And our last guest was Lebo Madiba, the MD of PR Powerhouse. And this is the question that she left for you. So she asks, outside of what you've experienced within arts and culture in building Brand South Africa in the last year, what other assets do we have at our disposal to build on what Brand South Africa can be?
Okay. So there's the obvious assets that we are already building on, which is your sports and your culture and so on. I'll go back to home base and I would say the creative economy. I think with the young continent that we have, the young country, and the high unemployment, especially of the youth, I do think that creative assets and even from a schooling level, starting to promote creativity as a viable, profitable and sustainable a career is something that we can export to the rest of the world. I mean, we've seen Hollywood do it. We've seen Bollywood do it. We've seen, to some extent, Nollywood do it, where the creative economy is starting to grow and be recognized. So that's the one asset that in some instances is getting exported, but I would put more emphasis on growing that creative economy.
And lastly, what's the one question that you'd ask our next guest about their work, their creative process, or their approach to the industry?
I guess for me, what is in our minds is the effect of AI on creativity. So I would want to know from our next guest, not from a global aspect per se, because I do believe these products are built with the global market in mind. But I would like to get that guest's opinion on how something that is not essentially developed for our continent can be used effectively in advertising and marketing or anything else that is AI related. You know, with balancing our realities. You know, when we are trying to create employment, we're trying to have more photographers and people that develop the work, but there's now a technology that could replace that. So from an African perspective, how do we deal with that? So basically our response to AI as a continent would be something interesting for me to hear.
Fascinating. Veli, thanks so much for making the time. This was, once again, a really insightful conversation. Thank you for making the time. And yeah, I've been following the work, as I've said, and it's been amazing just being on the sidelines, looking in, watching the growth and the you know, development and the evolution of how things have been happening at Avatar and M&N Brands.
No, thank you very much. And, you know, it would be amiss of me not to thank everyone for the love. We feel it from messages to words of support. I think where we are now, we understand that our growth is not just an avatar growth, but it's a collective responsibility. It's now a proof point for the people around us, the people that are starting out to have that sense of possibility. I mean, I think for us, winning a bank of the size of APSA just shows that it's possible for everyone, you know, and I hope the people can find inspiration in the work and that we've remained true to the insightful work. And I think the campaign Your Story Matters, as it develops, will show evidence of us really sticking to the core of what we've always been discussing. So thank you to you. Thank you to everyone that has covered our story. And thank you to the people that continue to show us love as we grow this brand. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter. On @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.